Yes. Holly Neer with Bernice Johnson Reagan. Words and Music. And that goes out to all. It's part of the Healing Wish. You're listening to KMUN Arts Live and Local. And dedicating this show to all those who have suffered, those who have died, those who have survived, those who have supported through this pandemic and through another one we're going to be talking about soon. And special healing wishes to Heather and to Susie, to Frederica, and to all. I also want to mention that it's a year. Tomorrow will be a year since John Lewis died. So that's where our activism comes in, making sure the Voting Act, John Lewis Voting Act, passes, and For the People Act. Also, a special shout out to Neil A. Armstrong. Nope, not that one. My Neil. Although it was 52 years ago that the other one made his name famous. Mine was right there in Nova Scotia, and he's still right here in Canada. So, I hope you are all well, and you are all as excited as we are here at KMUN, that some of our programmers are starting to come back into the station and send out their music to you live. I, on the other hand, have been doing that for over a year, or about a year, with the help of the wonderful staff here. Nevada's on the dial. There is no dial on the machines. And I'm in my car still. So thanks for being here for Arts Live and Local. And I'm very excited to welcome my first guest. And he inspired the Holly Neer Bernice Johnson Reagan song, They Are Falling All Around. Alan E. Rose is an author. We're going to be talking about him as a novelist, and he will be presenting live tonight at Kala in Astoria on Marine Drive between 10th and 11th. If you haven't heard about this, it's a wonderful gathering that has been started and is happening. And Heather Hershey is the regular host, but she will have a guest host this time on First Person Authors Talk at 8 o'clock, 7:30. Doors open, and there are tickets at the door. So, welcome, Alan Rose.
Hi, Carol. Good to be here.
Yes, it's good to hear your voice. We've been emailing, but...
Yes.
And welcome to Astoria. And
it's beautiful here.
Yeah, and you know what? Just as I said that, the sun started to come out. So it must be some magic. A big congratulations to you for this book, As If Death Summoned, released on December 1st, 2020, which is World AIDS Day, and won. I mean, this is fantastic that your timing is just right. You've been dealing with this issue probably much of your adult life, and with this book perhaps in your soul and spirit for many years. But I should let people know Alan is a almost a neighbor. Am I right? You live in the Longview area?
I'm in North Clark County.
Mm-hmm. North Clark County of Washington.
Yes.
And you've published or had published several books, and you also host TV chats and all kinds of things in the arts, and I am so looking forward to you. But today we want to talk about this amazing book that you wrote. And I'm not sure where the genesis was. It sounds as though it was partially autobiographical, perhaps kicked off by an experience you had in Australia. So why don't you start talking and I'll interrupt.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Okay. Yes, the book titled As If Death Summoned is about the AIDS epidemic and in the 80s and the 90s. And it starts in Australia, where I was living for a number of years. And while I was in Australia, the AIDS epidemic hit there about 1980 to 83. And then after I left Australia in 93, I came back to the States, to the Northwest, where I come from originally, and began working with Cascade AIDS Project in Portland, Oregon. So through my experience of the 80s and until 1999, when I left Cascade AIDS Project, I was very much involved in the AIDS epidemic. And all during that time, I wanted to bear witness to a modern plague, what this was about, how it impacted people's lives, certainly those people who became infected with HIV, but also their partners, their friends, their family members. And when I left in 1999, I set about really promising myself that I would write about it. But every time I began the process, I blocked. And that continued many years. And so through the years, I just kept on scribbling notes about different memories, different stories that I had recalled. I would stuff them away into an envelope. And it just kept building, getting thicker and thicker and thicker. And every time I went back to the story or attempted it, I got blocked again. So,
do you know what was going on there?
Definitely, yeah. I was, I think, not ready emotionally prepared to deal with it. And what I think was happening is all those years, there was a lot percolating at a subconscious level. In 2015, I retired to write full-time, and for whatever reason, it just suddenly exploded from me. It just gushed forward, and so that's why I think that all those years, it was percolating, and suddenly it was time, and so it came forth, and within 2 years, I had the book done, and within another 2 years, I was polishing it, and it was accepted by a publisher in 2019.
Wow.
We wanted to get it out in time for the 40th anniversary of the AIDS epidemic coming on the national radar, which is 1981. And so it was launched, like you said, on World AIDS Day, December 1st of last year.
Whose idea was that?
I think it was the publisher. She definitely saw it as this was momentous.
Yeah,
to do it on that anniversary.
Yeah, I appreciate that for sure. Were you writing other books in the meantime, or did you write the other books earlier?
Yes, I did write the books, other books earlier. I had a paranormal mystery called The Legacy of Emily Hargraves, based in Seattle. My second novel was called The Tales of Tokyo, based upon my years living in Japan. And then I wrote a short psychological mystery called The Unforgiven. And then after that, it became the As If Death Summoned dominated my time.
So how do you feel now that you put the book out, The timing is just quite amazing that you finished before the coronavirus erupted. Yes. Mm-hmm. And yet, many people who, obviously there are many of us who are still identifying and have memories and close friends who went through the AIDS epidemic, but there are also many people who did not.
Yes.
And don't even realize that there's still so much going on, but they do know about what it feels like. Mm-hmm. So how does that work for you?
I like the way you said it, Carol. E.L. Doctorow, the novelist most famous for Ragtime and Billy Bathgate, he once said that the historian tells us what happened. The historical novelist tells us what it felt like.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do in this novel was tell what it felt like to be in that epidemic of mm-hmm. the 80s and 90s. Interesting, just as we were wrapping up the book in June of last year, getting ready for its publication in December, of course, the coronavirus had come on, and so I wrote a foreword to the book comparing the COVID-19 pandemic to the AIDS epidemic, the similarities and the differences, that put some of the perspective on both epidemics, because there were significant similarities and significant differences. In launching the book, I was very pleased to tell what it felt like, you know, at that time. And some of the responses I've gotten, particularly from younger people who were either children at that time or not even living at that time, have appreciated what a different world it was compared to now and this epidemic.
Yeah. And I'm wondering also about the amount of attention that was paid and the caring and compassion by not all people even today.
Yeah.
But certainly it seems as though it was a greater reaction. I wondered whether what happened with the AIDS epidemic had affected what happened today, where people realized, since Dr. Fauci was part of both of those.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. Yes, and some of the benefits, if we want to call them that, from the AIDS epidemic was a greater strategies, public health strategies that were developed then because of the AIDS epidemic have been put into place for this one. I think the media learned a lot from the AIDS epidemic, initially rather ignoring what was happening as hundreds and then thousands of particularly gay men were becoming infected, and we read very little about it. Whereas this time the media has been much more responsible in covering the epidemic. Unfortunately, we had an
yeah.
administration in the 80s that ignored,
mm-hmm.
there's no other way to say it, is they mm-hmm. ignored mm-hmm. the epidemic and that there was a national health crisis. And we saw similarly, the administration last year initially ignoring it, downplaying it. In both cases, it was the public health officials, and certainly Dr. Fauci is high among them, who kept on calling out that this was a national emergency
mm-hmm.
that needed to be attended to.
Well, now going into your book, As If Death Summoned, what does the title mean? And if you would, can you either read us or tell us about the Bogong High Plains of Australia?
Sure. First off, the book takes place in 1995. It takes place over one night in a hospital waiting room where the narrator is sitting alone, keeping a vigil for somebody in the ICU. And part of the mystery of the book is which friend is in the ICU. And so as you go through the book, you meet a number of different people, and the question is, who is in the ICU? Mm-hmm. During that long night by himself, the narrator has a series of flashbacks, also some dreams, maybe some hallucinations. It gets very sort of strange for him because he's been over 30 hours without sleep. And that magical realism element was important to me to sort of play with the whole idea of what is real. Mm. So as we go through the night, he has these different experiences, flashbacks, memories, dreams, and so forth. And part of those memories go back to Australia, where his partner, who died of AIDS in Australia, he and his partner would go into the Bogong High Plains, which is a 6,000-foot plateau, vast plateau in northern Victoria, about 150 miles north of Melbourne. Mm. And it was a very sacred area to the Aboriginal people of Australia. And in the book, the Bogong High Plains becomes almost another character, representing sort of, you might call it the mystical, mysterious, the sacred in human experience. Mm-hmm. It also goes back to an actual historic experience called the Mount Bogong Tragedy. In 1936, three skiers were attempting to cross the high plains in winter, and they got caught in a blizzard. One person perished, Cleve Cole. The other two survived. And in the book, when the searchers bring Cleve Cole back, he's unconscious, and they bring him back to a township, and an old Aboriginal woman looks at him, and she pronounces, "They brought back only his body."
Yeah.
Look. There's a legend that Cleve Cole's spirit is still wandering the Bogong High Plains, forever lost.
Wow.
In the book, I have the narrator identifying with Cleve Cole, because the narrator finds that he too is lost in a blizzard of the AIDS epidemic. He too is slowly dying. And in the end, he comes to realize the Aboriginal woman's words. They only brought back his body. He realizes that when he came back to the States, he brought back only his body.
Okay. Now, Alan, my novelist author, who is very much alive, here with me on the radio, and tonight at Kala, and there are tickets available, folks. 7:30 doors open. What's your relationship with this Aborigine tale and reality?
I found the story a wonderful metaphor for the AIDS epidemic and for the narrator. And I always say I am not the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
It is a novel. There's some autobiographical elements to it. But the idea of, through this horrendous epidemic that we experienced in the 80s and 90s, there were moments of enormous grace, courage, compassion, nobility, and sacredness. And I found that in the story of the Bogong High Plains as well. And so I merged them together to tell the different stories of people who live out the AIDS epidemic. We begin to plumb the depths of human experience beyond just this time and this place. That there's something deeper there underlying human experience, that we can come in touch with it even during something as horrible as the current pandemic that we're going through now.
Now, I want to tell our listeners, I have not read the book yet. I am very much looking forward to that. But I did read that although, I'll just quote this one line, expected pathos and unexpected humor. So where does the humor come in? It sounds like there's lots of pressure releases in this book.
Yeah.
Is that just your writing, or is it the experience, the
right.
situation?
I knew that in writing a book about the AIDS epidemic, people would immediately and correctly think of, oh, suffering, death, a real downer. And so it was intentional on my part that I wanted to also capture the humor, because there was tremendous humor during that time, what I call undying humor in the face of death. And
beautiful.
It was just a brave, intelligent humor that we witnessed. I wanted to build that into the book. So I have been very pleased that the many reviewers have commented about the humor, that it was much funnier than they would have expected. And I think that that really helped it.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it recently won the Book of the Year Award for the Forward Indies Awards in the LGBT category. And I'm sure that part of the reason that it won was because of the humor and not a downer, as many people might expect.
So that was what the congratulations were for, the book coming out, and, well, that's the most important, and this Forward Indies Book of the Year Award.
Thank you.
Was that a surprise? I understand there was a huge
totally.
Number of... Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was told by my publisher that it was a finalist back in the spring, and I think both of us were amazed, because the publisher is a small publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
And that a debut novel like this would become a finalist was really amazing. And I was so happy with that. But I never even counted the possibility that it could win.
How wonderful.
So when my publisher announced, I think she was as flabbergasted as I was. And we've been very, very grateful for the response that has gotten from many people.
Absolutely. Well, we are out of time. You were right. So I'll just mention to folks, well, why don't you tell us your website so people can find this KLTV's book chat and WordFest and review books for Columbia River Reader. Your life is very full with wonderful stuff, and you're working on a new novel.
Yes.
And they're going to have to come tonight to get all the goods. But if folks don't live around here and can't come, is there somewhere they can look you up?
Sure. My website is www, and then my name, Alan, A-L-A-N, dash, Rose, R-O-S-E, .com. So www.alan-rose.com.
Okay. Easy enough. Thank you so much for joining me, Alan.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you tonight.
I look forward to it as well.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Folks, this is an extraordinary opportunity to meet and listen to Alan. So again, it's 7:30, doors open, and tickets are for sale at Kala. I think it's 1017 Marine Drive. It's on the south side between 10th and 11th. And I hope to see you there. I have some music for you from my next guest. But first, I need to tell you that there's some emergency information, follow-up to an earlier closure, Tillamook County Highway 101, MP 101, between Lincoln City and Nesquin. Northbound lanes are now open. Southbound lane will continue to use Slab Creek to Otis. Expect delays. And now, some Eugenia Riot. Yes. 170 Delancey. And my guest, Lee Jones, whose project, Eugenia Riot, is performing soon, actually, this coming week at Pickled Fish on the 21st and 22nd of July. That's in on the peninsula. Both her performances are on the peninsula. And on the 23rd, she'll be at the Shelburne Pub in Seaview. Welcome, Lee.
Hello, Carol. How's it going?
Oh, good. I'm glad you're here. And I, you know, folks need to see you. Well, I don't know. Do you start dancing and jumping around when you're performing, or is that just on the video? I loved your video.
Thank you so much. I probably won't be dancing quite to the extent that I am dancing in the video that you're talking about.
I bet
you
can't.
But, you know, I keep it loose, try to, like, you know, not be totally stiff about it.
No, I can't imagine you standing still, quite frankly, because that the video was just delightful. I watched it a couple of times, and I could just feel myself moving through the air, and very theatrical, very graceful and delightful. And I appreciated you promoting the United States Post Office and Black Lives Matter. And so who are you, Lee Jones? Where are you and who are you?
That's a loaded question. Did you say, where am I?
Yeah.
That one's a lot easier to answer at the moment. I live in Portland, but actually right in this moment, I'm out in Oregon wine country.
Ooh.
At a winery called Ooh. Domaine Serene, where I'm working at a private wine dinner event tonight. Just one of, not playing music, but doing like service industry
Right.
Stuff. So that's one of the many supplementary gigs that I have to support my music habit.
Yeah, I was exactly. That's what pays for your music habit. So, but you don't get to drink the wine until after the gig. Is that right?
That's true, but it makes it all the more sweet, the waiting for it.
Lovely. Okay. So tell us about this song, 170 Delancey.
Sure. It's a song that I kind of had the idea for, the seed of, about a year and a half ago, and then I finished it during quarantine. And, you know, there's not too much to say about it besides that it's about having a crush on someone who's at, on a very essential level, unavailable, and kind of the woes that come out of that kind of situation.
Sounds like universal theme.
Yeah, I think everybody can maybe relate to that in on some level at some point in their life.
But you were able to pack some politics in there too. It seems.
Yeah, I do what I can.
You do what
you
can.
You mean in the video or in the song itself?
In the
video.
In the video. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I recorded the song last fall, and the video didn't come out until a few months ago, but I recorded the video with my friend Pete Fitz. He's the one who directed and filmed it and put the edited it together and everything. We filmed it last fall in November, so, like, you know, still very deep in COVID times. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a very bare bones setup, just me and him and the fellow who plays the mailman in the one little vignette. And
right.
I kind of just was thinking about the upcoming election, and there's all this drama about mail-in voting and people, like, distrusting the system and everything. And I've always loved the United States Postal Service. I love sending letters and sending postcards, and it kind of, like, blows me away that you can just, like, put something in a box on one side of the country, and then 3 or 4 days later, it'll appear on the other side of the country. I get to an extent how that works, but, like, it's still, like, when I get a letter or like hear that someone has received my letter, I'm like, ooh, it worked, you know?
Well,
Well,
that's, I love your enthusiasm about it because these days, few people do that. Most people just email or text or stuff like that, but letters are so precious coming to us. So your musical background is what?
I grew up doing lots of musical theater in my hometown of Wilmington, North Carolina, and that's what I went to college at New York University. And originally for musical theater and then kind of transitioned to more other forms of theater. But my musical background started in musical theater. Then kind of when I was in my early 20s, I started to get a little bit more interested in writing my own music and became more interested in more like folk traditions and singer-songwriter traditions. And so that's kind of what has informed my style, I'd say.
Well, maybe that's why I love it so much. Also, now I understand the Delancey connection, of course, if you went to NYU.
Yes, I lived in New York,
That makes sense, because crossing Delancey. So are you still, obviously, since you're going to be playing at Pickled Fish on the 21st and 22nd and at the Shelburne Pub on the 23rd, how long have you been back out in public? Were you able to make music, live music, during the lockdown?
A little bit. I did a few, like a lot of musicians did throughout the pandemic, I did a few live streams throughout the month. But then I returned to live playing this past March. There's a bar in Portland called the Alberta Street Pub, and they started hosting outdoor, socially distanced concerts in March. And so I've been playing there once a month since March. But this will be my first public out-of-town gigs this year. So I'm very excited about that.
And is this solo, or do you have a band, or what? And how do you usually play?
Totally. I play in a variety of different permutations. For these shows next week, I will be playing solo, accompanying myself on guitar. I'm also part of a band, which is a trio of ladies called Five Letter Word. And we do a lot of three-part harmonies.
Ooh.
It is an acoustic band. There's upright bass, guitar. Sometimes there's a little bit of percussion. And then with Eugenia Riot, I sometimes play solo. Other times I have other folks accompanying me on a second guitar or things like that. Eugenie Wright is a brand new project for me, and it's kind of my vision of my solo project. Like, I've been in collaborative bands before, but I didn't feel like I kind of had a place to put, like, specific, very personal songs of mine.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I created this new project, and I took the name Eugenia Riot from my eldest known female ancestor, who was born in the year 1205 in England.
What? How could you possibly know that? Oh my God, that's incredible.
I know, it's pretty wild. A cousin of mine gave this company to do like a deep researched family ancestry tree. And that's as far back as they were able to trace
it. Yeah, well, hello. 12?
Yeah, it's pretty far. Yeah.
Pretty far, yes. That answers the question, because that is not a name that we hear very much in modern times. So it's delightful.
Well, I love the kind of like dichotomy of like the name Eugenia, which seems like kind of an older name, and then the word riot, which has this very like electric sound to it. And the fact that that was her actual last name is just really cool to me.
It's
and
amazing.
Of course, she married someone with a different last name, and so the last name Riot got lost to history, at least for our family. And so I wanted to bring it back.
Good for you. Excellent. And are you able to, or will you be able to, you think, continue to make music and create gigs? Do you go very far? Do you stick around the Pacific Northwest? As I say, I was delighted by what you're doing. I only saw that one piece, which was solo. But I, when you talk about your five spots, no, what was it called?
Five letter word.
That's it. Five letter word. That sounds delicious, also.
Totally.
So, do you play?
Yes, I have done quite a bit of touring, both around the U.S. and even abroad in Europe and Canada. And a former band of mine even did a tour in Africa 3 years ago.
Wow.
So I've gotten around a little bit, and I hope to continue to do so with this new project. But I'm at the kind of just getting it up off the ground stages at the moment. But I have plans to record an album this fall and then just kind of see where things go from there.
Well, that's great. I'm sure you'll be back this way. We'll be able to play your music on KMUN, especially.
I'd love that.
Yeah, and I do the folk show when we're back, so you'll have to come in and play live on the radio, which will be great fun. I wish you lots of luck, and remind folks they can see you in person at Pickled Fish and Shelburne Pub, July 21, 22, and 23. And how do they find you online?
Online, if you, I don't have a website yet for Eugenia Riot, but I do have a Bandcamp page. If you just Google Eugenia Riot music, it should come up. And also, I do have a few videos up, or a couple of videos up besides that one. So if you Google Eugenia Riot, it should come up. You might see something about a woman born in 1205, and that's
yes,
the that's who it's named after.
That's great.
But, so yeah, just Google Eugenia Riot music, and also what else? Oh yeah, you can find me on social media on Instagram at Eugenia Riot. I think it's Eugenia_Riot. And yes, it's been a pleasure being on here. I wish I was in town tonight to go to Alan's event. I was tuning in right before you called me, and that was a wonderful conversation, and I want to get my hands on that book.
Yeah, me too. And he apparently, there's a video that we're going to be seeing tonight of him too, but it's going to be very different from yours. So thank you so much for joining us here at KMUN, Lee. And Lee Jones, a.k.a. Eugenia Riot, and wish you the best of luck, and look forward to seeing you back here in person.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Carol. This has been fun.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
And folks, you are listening to Arts Live and Local, and remember that Highway 101 between Lincoln City and Nesquin, northbound lanes open, southbound lane using Slab Creek to Otis. And a shout out to Squamish and Seashelt, to Omaha and Sydney and Robin and Tessa and Sev. And we have some more music because there's another exciting, there is so much going on. The arts are just blowing out the windows. So have a listen to Harry Chapin, who died 40 years ago today. He founded Why Hunger, and of course you know his brother Tom Chapin and his daughter Jen Chapin. I think you'll recognize this song. So a very familiar song to most of us, usually through the Cat Stevens version, but Harry Chapin is the man. Lucky, lucky us to have so many brilliant, creative people in our world then and now. Well, speaking of creative people, and where do they start? Well, they start when they're children. And we've got the Missoula Children's Theater in town, the town of Astoria, that is, right now. And this Saturday, that would be tomorrow, they will be performing The Emperor's New Clothes. That's at the Liberty Theater, 12th and Commercial, Liberty, Astoria, And I have the directors who are going to tell you what Missoula Children's Theater, what kind of magic they do with children all over the country. Jax and Charlotte von Adler are my guests. Hi, welcome to Arts Live and Local.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
I am quite well. And you also, how you doing after a week of working with, how many kids did you have?
30. This week we had 31.
31 kids. How did it go?
It's going great. We are having an awesome time here in Astoria. It is absolutely beautiful. The kids are so passionate and so excited to be on stage, so we could not be happier to be here.
Oh, that's...
We always say that we would rather have students who are ready to work and excited, so these kids here are certainly some of those kinds.
So, for folks who aren't familiar with Missoula Children's Theater and how it works, why don't you tell them, where did these kids come from? Who are they? You didn't bring them with you.
Nope. Charlie and myself, we travel with just us two and a red truck. We have all of our costumes and scripts and everything we need to perform a show in the back of our truck.
Everything except the students, that is.
We go to a location. We usually drive on Sundays. On Monday, we arrive. We meet the students. We audition them all. We cast them right then and there. And we start a rehearsal that day.
Wow.
We rehearse with them throughout the week. We rehearse all through the week through either Friday or through Saturday. And then on Saturday, we perform with them. They have their performance. Then we pack it all up, and the next day we drive to the next place.
Oh, gosh. How long do you do this?
Our tours last between 3 and 5 months, depending on the tour. This one is 3 months long.
Wait. So every week you're in a different school? You don't work for 3 months straight, do you?
Sometimes.
That's exhausting just thinking about it. Okay, where are you going? Where are you going from Astoria, for example?
We'll be headed to Umatilla, Oregon.
That's quite a ways. Yeah, that's the other side of Oregon. That will be fun. I hope you have some lightweight clothing, too. It gets kind of hot over there. So, okay.
Oh, good.
So, what fascinates me is how you, what the purpose, in addition to the creativity and the excitement, what else are you hoping to have happen with these children?
Our motto of the company is instilling life lessons through the performing arts. So our goal is that these students walk away having learned a life skill through what we do. So if that skill is how to say their name loud and clearly, or how to be confident on stage, or how to project their voice, or even other things like... A really common one that a lot of people don't think about is how to have different kinds of conversations. We meet a lot of young students who have not been in group scenarios a lot, and so they are learning to have different kinds of conversations where they mostly listen and one person speaks, or different kinds of conversations where they can speak in a group with those around them. And it's really interesting to teach people how to function in different group scenarios because it's something that we assume just kind of comes to us because we don't remember people directly teaching it to us because we learn it when we're so young, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool to see how students can grow into those different kinds of conversations.
It's amazing, isn't it, that in 1 week you can see the differences in the children.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You can see the differences every moment, every single moment that we share with these kids. They are growing and learning. It is amazing, astounding.
Beautiful. Of course, it's only a week, so they do not create the costumes or the play. You cast them in roles. Are you in the play as well this time?
So one of us acts on stage with the students each time. That role is Rudy the Royal Scholar, which this week is Charlie. And the other tour actor director is backstage directing, so checking to make sure that the kids get to their place on time, telling them to stand up, where to go, handing them props.
Mm-hmm. So there,
and the other actors on stage ensuring that things can go smoothly. And if worse comes to worse and everyone on stage freezes, Charlie's got the whole script memorized and can save the day and send them a line.
I love it. And this time it's the Emperor's New Clothes. So are you doing the Emperor's New Clothes for 3 months in all of the different places?
Yes.
Okay, I guess you've got it memorized. if you're, and what's the age range with these kids in Astoria?
We have students from 5 all the way to 18.
Wow, how delightful. That's wonderful. That's a whole nother skill, is working with interage. It's almost intergenerational.
Yes.
with that group. May I ask a personal question? How old are you?
I am 24. Jax, I'm 24.
And I am almost 23. My birthday is next week.
Happy birthday to you. And I've seen Missoula Children's Theater, and that's why I asked, because I know that the directors themselves are pretty young. What's your acting? Mm-hmm. We only have a couple of minutes, so what's your theater background, not just acting, obviously. You're directing, you're doing everything. So what's your personal background?
Yeah. I started working in theater when I was 14. I got my first job working an internship at a youth theater in Hartford, Connecticut, where I'm from. And I really fell in love with not only the teaching aspect, but also with the behind the scenes and costuming, makeup artistry, other things that are a part of theater as well. So I did that all throughout high school and college. I ended up getting a degree in musical theater. And since college, I worked at a YMCA facility teaching outdoor education for a little bit. And before missing the theater too much, and ended up auditioning for and working for Missoula Children's Theater. And that's where I've been since, and I've been really happy to do so.
Wonderful. And that was Jax?
Yes.
Speaking. How about you, Charlie?
Well, I started a degree in musical theater, but when I was in college, I realized that there were a few health issues that I had no idea were going on, so I took some time to get better. And I moved to Denver, Colorado, and I tried living there, but the cost of living is so expensive that I was working 5 jobs, and I still couldn't afford to house myself comfortably.
Right.
So I moved to South Carolina, where I just waited tables for a couple years, and then Jax and I started talking more and more, and Jax started working with Missoula Children's Theater, and they told me that I would be a decent candidate at
it. Right.
And I said, oh, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
And here you
are.
How wonderful. Well, you know, it's funny because I had no idea. My last guest, Lee Jones, also studied musical theater at NYU. So I'm delighted that all of you folks, youngish folks, are involved in the creative performing arts. Thank you so much for coming to Astoria, for leading our children in those life skills through participation in the performing arts. I am a great believer. And folks, this is tomorrow. The shows are at 3:00 and 5:30. It's the same show both times, but you can go and get your tickets. I bet the box office is open right now, or go online to Liberty Astoria and get yourself a ticket, and they are very reasonable, and it is delightful to see our children performing. And the Emperor's New Clothes, I think, is very relevant. It especially was relevant in the last 4 years, but it's still relevant in this world. So thanks again, Jax and Charlotte Vanna Adler, and good luck to you in your travels
with children and the arts. Take care now.
Bye-bye. We'll see you at the show.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that's about it, folks, for Arts Live and Local. Thank you for being here. And I hope you will take advantage of some or all of these things that are going on in the arts. Call it tonight. Also, the Coaster Theater is performing at in the park, 6 o'clock Friday with Shakespeareans, and Saturday at 6 with Mystery. Joshua Thomas is at the Southwestern tomorrow. And the Performing Arts Center on the Peninsula has Brian Connor on Wednesday. And that's it for me, KMUN Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook, and Coast Ridge.